Hello and welcome to Real Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, and I'm here with you every Tuesday at lunchtime to answer questions large and small. That's what I think of Real Talk as. Today's show is kind of qualifying as both. The question is, how does a normal person go from swimming for fitness to swimming the English Channel? 42 miles of cold water. My guest today is Heidi Sherpick, and she did it. She is our DJ for Borderlines on Thursday afternoons with reggae music, and she just came back from swimming the English Channel. Welcome, Heidi.
Hi. Thank you so much, Susan.
And you actually walked in on your own power. I'm so impressed.
I actually came out of the Puget Sound about 45 minutes ago.
Did you?
Yeah.
So you're back at it.
Yeah. Little hair of the dog.
Yeah. So how did you get from swimming for fitness to what makes a person decide, I think I'll swim the English Channel?
I think just trying to do better than your last swim. I had a friend named Kate who signed up for a solo, and then she realized, oh, I'm not quite ready to do a solo by myself.
Solo on the English Channel?
Yeah. So she recruited three of us to join her for a four-person relay, which is actually a small relay. Six is the normal. And we went on a spring tide, and it was a crazy magic carpet ride. Very extreme highs and lows. So that meant a lot of current, and that meant a lot of mileage covering the English Channel on our journey.
I noticed on your map that it wasn't a straight line by any means. You did this big loop or big curve.
Yeah.
And that was because the currents were pushing you?
The currents were pushing us and pulling us. And the pilot, the boat captain, their job is to get us across and figure out how to triangulate to help us get across. At the same time, navigating the largest shipping lanes in the world. This was like tankers and giant ferries and, I mean, everything, containers and yachts and crazy stuff all along the way.
Were there communication lines that your boat captain used to make sure those people knew there were swimmers out there?
Yeah, so they were radioing the whole time. There was a time when our swim mate, Curtis, actually, a tanker diverted course to allow him to keep his track. And Lance, our pilot, said, you know, excuse me, I have a channel swimmer and we have a relay in progress and we can certainly wait for you to cross in this very diplomatic way.
Yeah.
And then the tanker's, oh no, it's fine, I'll divert. And this gigantic ship in the middle of the channel changes course.
Oh my
just so
God.
This mere mortal can keep going straight. It was really cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
So what do you do while you're waiting? Just tread water?
Yeah, really.
Really?
Yeah, he literally tread. It's funny, we have some video footage and we'll get all that posted pretty soon. But yeah, he literally just kind of stopped and tread water and looked into the window kind of for the pilot to give him some direction. And the pilot's basically like, time out, just it'll pass and you can keep going now. And then sure enough, it changed course. It was really, really wild.
So what are the rules around this kind of venture or competition?
Yeah.
I presume it's a competition of some sort.
It's a sanctioned swim. There are two organizing bodies. One is called Channel Swimming Association, and the other is called the Channel Swimming and Piloting Federation. Around both, the set of rules are for the swimmers in a relay situation, you have to pick a 1 or 2 hour rotation. For each swimmer, you start in a sequence. You do not deviate from that sequence. So once you set who's going in what order, you do not change it. Doesn't matter if the person gets tired, stung out by jellyfish, cramps. It does not matter. Tough. You have to swim your given leg until you get across.
So is the assumption that you're each going to do only one leg?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
You're going to do 1 hour. And then you have literally just tiny little 5 minute window to change so you finish your full hour, then a horn beeps and that's your sign to get on deck quickly because the other swimmer splashes in and takes over where you were swimming. You have to hurry and get on deck. If you go past that 5 minutes, you can be disqualified. So all that training and all that money and all that travel.
Oh my God.
Out the window, and it doesn't count as a sanctioned swim. And so there's a lot of rules. So no wetsuit. It is between 58 and 62 degrees in the English Channel. We had a balmy tropical season because of heat waves that happened. So it was 17 Celsius. So that was 62. I'll tell you, it felt a lot like Puget Sound. Anytime a big vessel went by and those cold waters stirred up to the surface, it felt really cold, like mid-50s, late, you know, high 50s, but it did not feel like a balmy 62 degrees ever.
I guess that's incentive to keep kicking hard.
Exactly. No, seriously, you swim out hard and you go as hard as you can. Yeah. There's cameras on either side of the boat that feed into a monitor at the helm for the pilot. There's one in the back of the boat. There's one on either side of the boat. If you swim on the windward side, you're going to get clobbered by chop, but you don't have to deal with the diesel fumes. If you swim on the lee side, you're protected more from the chop and the surface wind, but then you taste diesel. Oh. I swam on the lee side, and it took days to get rid of the taste of diesel in my mouth.
Mm.
Very torn up, salt bloated mouth for a couple days, even with just 4 hours of swimming plus the last leg into
just
France.
4 hours of swimming.
I mean, I know, but but it was very rocky and rolly the whole way. There was a lot of surge, and you rocked after, like, the next day you were still rocking.
Oh yeah, you have to get your land legs back.
Oh totally. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
So how did you fund this thing? Were there sponsors?
No, there were not any sponsors. It's all self-funded. Basically, Kate took on the initial fees and kind of pulled. She was our team captain, definitely. This was sort of her idea. She recruited who she knew. We trained together in Lake Washington all the time and at Alki Beach, so, and in Paradise Cove here on Vashon. So we were really familiar with each other's swim style. We knew we got along. She knew she could handle hanging out with me in that waiting window. So there's this 8-day window. I'll get back to that. But basically, we split the money. And so it was around just the boat fees, and that was like around $3,200 or something. And then you split it into four, and it's a lot more palatable. And then there's some fees to join the CSNPF Association and become like an official channel swimmer. So there's a whole little club you have to join. Then there's the physical, making sure you're not going to die of a heart attack. It's a very real thing. There's a qualifying swim that you have to do, a 2-hour cold water qualifier in 60 degrees.
Is that timed?
Yeah.
It is.
Oh, yeah. And you have to have it signed off by an observer and turn all that in advance. So there's some definite hoops to jump and some legs to cross. I worked really hard, both training and physically, but also as a freelance writer, just to sock away some money.
Yeah.
Just to get it done and not have to stress out about the money. Yeah. So no sponsors.
How much time per day did you put in to train for this thing?
Honestly, if you broke it out by day, an hour-ish, but a really hardcore hour.
Yeah.
High intensity training. So that means Vashon Athletic Club, swimming with Alan Nakano, a master's coach at the Rockfins. He was my Saturday guy and put me through my paces with pool swimming, which isn't my favorite thing to do because it's a small little fishbowl compared to being outside, right? Yeah. And then Josh over here at Vashon Strong is a CrossFit gym. So I did personal training with Josh in the
months.
So
you were doing weight training.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you want to dig deep when you're pulling water. And I wanted to get my lats strong and my shoulders really strong. And so that's not my jam. So lifting weights is not my thing. And so it was out of my comfort zone to do this kind of training. And it is no joke. What Josh does over there, much respect. He has some really strong people, and he's grooming some really strong people. He's very kind and sweet and very positive. He never tells you you suck.
Even if you think you do.
I thought I did, but he said I was all right. And he said I was good. It was just really hardcore. But your body responds to that kind of training. And as you get in this rhythm of just always committing to training, it's good. Swimming out at Dilworth every Tuesday with my mermaids, we do 1.5 to 2 miles.
Do you swim with a wetsuit in Puget Sound when you're training?
Usually, yes.
Oh, I'm so relieved.
But on Saturdays at Alki Beach, I would not. That's another training I would do. It's my open water. So yeah, the wetsuit came off at Alki Beach in 30-minute sessions because I started when it was 48 Fahrenheit in Puget Sound in a bikini.
Oh my God.
I know.
So what happens to your body in this process? How did it change?
It just gets used to it. That's the truth. I mean, the more you do it, the easier it becomes. And I am not a SEAL. You know, a lot of women who swim open water have this wonderful bioprene that insulates them, and it's real. The bioprene, the extra weight helps. People were saying, oh, you're going to need to gain an extra 25 pounds to go swim the channel, even if you're doing a relay. And I just wasn't going to go there. I wasn't going to do that. So there are actual training guides you can do. And as we got closer to the swim, we were jumping in three times into the Puget Sound in skin. They call it in skin, no wetsuit, for 30-minute shots. And it was still pretty cold. The sound compared to English Channel is a lot colder here. So if you can do that, then you're good for an hour. And that was awesome to jump into the English Channel and be like, oh, ooh, this isn't as cold
this
as you just
okay.
said.
Yeah.
This is cool. I can handle this. Yeah, it was good. It was really good.
I guess I'm asking from when you started swimming training.
Sure.
And let's go back to the story of what made you start training in a pool.
Oh, this is an interesting story. I don't even know how much I've told you, Susan. The reason I started in a pool was in 2009, I was diagnosed with MS.
Yes.
And a neurologist told me for cramping and for endorphins to help combat pain, I could try this path of working out. And she had offered to put me on beta interferons, which is what you do for relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis. And I just wasn't ready to go there. I did a lot of reading, and they haven't really proven it's, you know, a slam dunk if you start these injections, that it's actually going to really take care of the demyelination process that happens in your spinal cord.
Define that demyelination.
Sure.
What does that mean?
It's the protective sheath around your nerves. And in MS, it eats away. It's an autoimmune dysfunction, and the protective sheath around your nerves gets eaten away, and you have what presents on an MRI as the scarring, or they call it contrast, you know, it pops up on contrast. So I have three in my C-spine that have never gone away over the course of 11 years or however long, not quite 9 years that I've been getting image for this. But I wasn't convinced that it was MS, but I just didn't know. I just kind of refuted going onto the drugs. I didn't want to be, I have a lot of friends that have MS too in the Northwest, and I've seen different outcomes with that. I had one friend who was on a fentanyl patch, and she actually died from interactions of opioids. And that was pretty horrible.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was right in my first year of swimming. And I just thought, I'm not going to end up like that. Anyway, so the swimming was great. And then I started to just get better. I hired Dana Rogers at VAC, and she showed me how to actually refine my technique and swim competently back and forth across a pool. Scott Bonney got me into open water, got me down to my first competition in 2010 in La Jolla. And I was hooked after that. Just became a regular part of, that was like my primary fitness. Yeah.
And are you taking any medication?
No.
No. So you have beaten MS with swimming.
Yeah, and a very strange therapy called bee sting therapy.
Bee sting?
Bee stings, apitherapy.
Oh, bee sting.
Bees, because we have honeybees.
Yes.
Oh, bee sting. You thought I said B-E-A-S-T.
Bee sting, yeah.
No.
Oh.
B-E-E sting therapy, and we sting into my spinal cord. We did. We don't do it anymore. We're through it. But it was a lot of stings, and in other countries, they use bee stings to combat things like rheumatoid arthritis and arthritic things and even cancer. They're studying it now. It's FDA is totally not about it. But yeah, so bee sting therapy really helps. And I'll have days where I'm not feeling that great in my neck, or, you know, because in addition to just the spinal cord scarring that I have a lot of like degenerative arthritic and orthopedic stuff going on. So we'll sting it and I'll feel great. There's something about it. So
is that,
yeah.
Do we know what it is?
There's a cortical response, and David, my husband, would be able to explain it a lot better. But
a cortical response.
Yeah. It's like it's cortisol. Yeah. It releases.
That the bees release?
The venom, that's your body responding to the venom in the bee stings. Yeah, so it's magic. It's kind of like this natural anti-inflammatory.
So wait, if I'm understanding this correctly,
yes.
The body responds to bee stings by producing cortisol.
That is correct.
Which is an anti-inflammatory.
It's an anti-inflammatory.
And it's also an antidepressant.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And you feel kind of energized. And the next day after I do bee stings, I will feel energized. I know it sounds crazy. But it's very Vashon.
Very Vashon, right. I'm talking with Heidi Sherpek, who is DJ Heidi on Thursdays here on The Voice of Vashon with her reggae show, Borderlines. And she just finished swimming the English Channel. We can do this show here on Real Talk because of the generosity of Windermere Vashon Real Estate, who support all our community information programming and our emergency alert service. Here on The Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. I'm Susan McCabe, your host. This is Real Talk. And Heidi Sherpek, we're talking about bee sting therapy, or MS.
Is yeah. It,
and you said it's used for some other things as
yeah.
well.
Cancer and there's actually somebody that David's treating right now who had a pancreatic tumor that is gone.
No
that
kidding.
Is gone after this. Young lady, 22 years old, lives on the island, and he treated her and it is gone. This is huge. I know we're going off the rails a little bit.
Well,
yeah.
That's okay, but it's all part and parcel to the idea of dealing with one's body,
right.
Particularly under adverse circumstances,
that's
like
right.
multiple sclerosis.
Absolutely.
And how swimming and exercise and fitness can help that.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by the whole bee sting
thing. I know, we got to sting you.
Yeah. Well, yeah. How come when I get stung by a bee on my hand or my arm,
yeah,
it swells up and hurts?
That's normal. That's okay. But the more you would get stung, the less you would have much of a reaction. Your titer builds up.
Oh.
It's totally normal to swell. People sometimes think, oh, I'm allergic, but they're not. It's just your body at first will have a freak out, but as you do it again and again, it definitely eases up.
The other thing I think I know is that honey is a natural antibiotic.
It is. It is. It's an antibiotic and it's also an antifungal. It's
yes.
amazing.
And used for years in treating yeah. colds
yeah.
and flu.
Anything.
Sore throat.
Kind of wounds. Doctors used it on open wounds. It's one of the most effective wound healers that there is.
It's also a great moisturizing facial.
I feel like that would be sticky, but I use something called, there's a product called Benigma out of New Zealand that mm-hmm. has Manuka in it and bee venom mm-hmm. also. And I use it and I love it. It's great.
Well, folks, that's an endorsement and that's another show for another time.
Yeah.
We're going to explore this bee sting therapy
to.
Thing. Let's get back
sure.
to the English, swimming the English Channel
okay.
though.
Okay.
What surprised you about the experience? What were you not ready for?
I honestly trained so hard in open water that I was pretty much, I want to just give a shout out. If you swim in Puget Sound, you're ready. You can swim anywhere. Seriously, the currents here are no joke. You get enough surge that you don't get super, super sick, even in a swelly place like the English Channel. What surprised me were the proliferation of jellyfish, all kinds of jellyfish I had never seen before.
Ah.
No.
they sting?
They do sting. It's a little more than nettle, but a lot less than a bee sting. So it was sort of more in between. And the next day, the welts were gone, but there were so many. There was one moment when Kate, my swim mate, was looking over the rails and I turned up for a rotation and I dropped the F-bomb really loud. And then I stuck my head down for a breath and then I stuck my head up for another breath and I said, jellies. And I stuck my head down for a breath. So many. Stuck my head down for a breath. And I think I said another F-bomb and just swam through them.
And they were just stinging you.
They were.
Do they sting because they're irritated or just because...
You're in their way. Yeah. They were at all levels and all different kinds, but mostly these compass jellies they're not here. They're beautiful. They're maybe 5 inches around and they have a little hot cross bun purple mark uh-huh. in their translucency. And then this beautiful kind of milky white tendrils. And there were a lot of those, but I was not ready for that. I was not ready for how many people still smoke in the UK and on deck and down below the
oh,
boat.
Oh, really?
Dude, the pilot. I love the pilot, but he smokes. And he smokes in his boat. And it was disgusting. Because you get out from all the diesel crap and then you want to go down below and dress. And he's smoking. And I'm sorry if you're listening. I hope you're not ever listening. But that was really unfortunate. So people still smoke hardcore in the UK and in France. I had no idea.
They do.
It's
yeah.
a thing.
Yeah. It's still popular in Europe and in China.
Yeah. In China. I was surprised I was really happy. The crew was so nice. The staff on the boat, there was a pilot. There was an official observer who made sure she counted your strokes and made sure you didn't have hypothermia and made sure you were alert and okay. And the crew were so nice. They took photos and they encouraged you all the way through and would tell you if you swam a really strong leg. And I thought that was awesome. I wasn't expecting the value add of sort of your booster team.
Yeah.
So that was cool. There was a yacht that almost hit our boat on my first leg. It was coming straight for our boat. And I saw it because I looked to the left through the bow of the boat. And just through the bow, I saw this big blue yacht coming for the boat and me, but it would not have seen me on the other side of the boat. And the observer was looking through a porthole window at me, and I pointed like, there's something over there. And then you could see her turn over and look, the horn sounds again. Nobody's moving. It's coming closer and closer and closer. And I stopped, I just tread water. And then the boat stopped. The pilot gets out on the bow and starts cursing out this guy. It's so close. It's like Grey Poupon.
Oh,
close. Oh. I could see his eyes. They were blue.
Oh.
And he was very indignantly just kind of standing there, and he crossed the bow in this giant blue, beautiful, like America's Cup like sailboat. Uh-huh. It was just him. And I don't know if he was not listening and it was super windy or what, but that scared me to death. I thought, oh my God, I can understand how people die doing this stuff. It has nothing to do with your swimming. It's just the hazards that are out there in the channel. So that was a little alarming.
Do people die doing this?
Yes, they do. But usually a heart attack.
Oh, that's more common than an accident with the boat or
absolutely
jellyfish.
It's really rare. It's really rare, to have any kind of collision.
How often do people swim the English Channel, whether solo or in relay?
I am so glad you asked this question. We looked at that. Kate and I were really curious. So there have been about 10,000 total swims across the channel since they started counting.
And when was that?
The first one was in 1875 or somewhere around there. Oh. But swimmers, there have been a total with relayers and soloists about 8,000 total in the history. Now, keep in mind, there are 50,000 Ironmans per year. 50,000 Ironmen.
Wait, 50,000 Ironman competitors?
Competitions. No, competitors. You're
competitors,
right. 50,000 people who have done Ironmans per year. Thank you for asking. So 8,000 English Channel swimmers in the entire history. That puts it in perspective.
It's not a big number then.
And then if you think about people in the world, we're at about 8 billion, not even 8 billion.
Yeah.
So I had someone try to crunch the numbers and they said it might be 1 in 100 million that have ever swum the channel. So I feel like I should play Lotto.
Really? Yeah, you should. But I don't think there's much about luck that makes this work.
That's true. That's
true. It's incredible training.
It was great to see my teammates and watch them. Encourage them. I saw, watching Curtis get that tanker diverted. That was awesome. He swam so hard on his last leg to get us to France. Getting to France is a pain in the butt.
Oh.
It's the hardest part of the swim.
Oh.
At the end.
Why?
There is this area called the inshore waters. There's water that rushes around this point, and depending on what's happening with the current, it's like a barrier that's really hard to get through, and you're really swimming as hard as you can possibly swim at the end of your swim.
Wow.
It's like you got to dig deep and go, yay for relays.
Yeah. So when you're training here in Puget Sound, for those of us who might be considering swimming, long distance swimming in Puget Sound, where do you go and how far out do you go?
We stay coastal.
In the Sound or in Quartermaster Harbor?
Sure. We tend to swim either at Dilworth Point. We go Dilworth to Glen Acres and back. So roughly between 1.5 miles and 2 miles. It's very much middle distance. Mm-hmm. And same with Paradise Cove. Paradise Cove has some crazy currents depending on the tide. If you get out to Camp South, it whooshes by there one way or the other, and it can be really ugly and really scary, believe it or not. So
Who protects you when you're out there? I mean, what if something goes wrong? Are you out there practicing by yourself?
Just with friends. I mean, we never go out alone. There are swimmers, I will not mention them by name, that go out by themselves a lot.
Not smart.
I wish they wouldn't do that. I love them. So yeah, we just hang out together. Sometimes Scott Bonney will do with the sailboat a Docton to Burton swim, which is really fun. And mm-hmm. you've got the boat right there.
Yeah.
So that's nice. That's about a once a year thing. And there's not really a set time. Sometimes in November he'll do it when there's not a lot else going on swim event wise. Really fun. But a mile, 2 miles, 3 miles. One time we swam from the La Playa restaurant, the no longer La Playa right. restaurant on the north end, all the way around to Dilworth Point.
Ooh.
That was almost 4 miles. That was a beautiful swim.
How long did that take you?
Gosh, almost 3 hours. Yeah.
Of constant yeah. motion.
Yeah.
You don't drink water. You don't stop for lunch.
We had kayakers on that one just because it was so long, and we had thermoses of tea. But no, typically we don't feed in between. We just go for it.
When yeah. you were swimming the English Channel, when it wasn't your turn,
yep.
were you stocking up on nutrition? What kind of food did you eat?
Really light food. Oatmeal, just really bland, light food. Oatmeal. They had these wonderful little biscuits, or just kind of like a not so sweet cookie with a mm-hmm. little bit of chocolate on it. They were so good. I had bee bread, which is a product from the beehive. It's
of back course, to the bees. Yes.
I know, but it has a lot of amino acids and protein, so it was really easy to digest and instant power food. So yay, thank you, David. And then we had just beautiful hot teas of different varieties, like Earl Grey and Rubios. I don't know if I'm saying
oh, yeah.
it right.
I'm not sure. I know which. It's a reddish
yeah,
tea.
Yeah, really yummy. And
supposedly a superfood.
Well, it was working.
Yeah.
It was good. So all those things just help warm you up, but they don't have too much flavor, so you're not burping it up in the water. So
oh.
it was really good.
Oh, yeah, that would make a difference.
Yeah, it totally
all these
does.
Things we don't think of.
No. Because you got to go back out there. And that's the other thing with a relay, is a head trip. Because you get cold, you shiver,
oh.
you rewarm, and then you have to psych yourself back into jumping in the water again.
Oh, my God.
That's the only benefit against us. Like, the soloists have a benefit because they get cold the one time and yeah. they stay cold.
Right.
Whereas when you're doing a relay, you have to get back in. And
so
and
how many times did you actually?
I did four full legs, and then I did a fifth partial 400 meter leg into France. I followed the swimmer who got us on. He was on the France leg, and the pilot said, okay guys, if you want to follow Brandy into shore, it was midnight, it was pitch black, you can go. And I looked at Kate, and Kate's shivering, and she's like, I'm tired, I don't think I want to do it. And Curtis is fully dressed for dinner in London, like, I'm done, I'm not going back in. And I looked at them like, are you kidding me? Hell, I just flung off my coat, I had a suit on, I was ready, I was like, I'm in. And I put on a light stick around my goggles, and I went after Randy. He didn't even know I was behind him until he was almost ashore. And I cried, like, just watching him get up on the sand, and it was amazing.
Were there yeah. people there to greet you?
No, there was not a soul. It was like landing in the middle of Mars. It was like there was nothing. There were no lights in the hills. Like, you could see a lighthouse light swirling around, and it would catch the silhouette flash of hills. But other than that, it was nothing. So, yeah, crazy. Dark.
Heidi Sherpeck, my swimming cap is
Woo!
Off to you.
Thank you.
I am so impressed, and I'm sure our listeners are as well. This is Real Talk with Susan McCabe. We've been talking with Heidi Sherpeck, who just finished swimming the English Channel with three of her best friends, and she's a normal person. It started out as a fitness program and turned into a miracle. So
Yay.
With just a few, we have a minute left. What's your next trick?
We're probably going to do another one.
Are you really?
I'm serious. But maybe a gentler tide with more people. And then we're going to swim around Jersey. We're going to do a relay around the island.
Is it New Jersey?
No, there's a little UK island in the Channel Islands right next to France called Jersey. And a lot of people do relays. So we'll do some more of these.
We will be watching
All right.
for you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Heidi. And thank you all for listening to Real Talk. We're here every Tuesday at lunchtime to seek answers to questions large and small. And there are also encore Real Talk episodes on Fridays at 6 p.m. Thanks again for listening.